Welcome to Eat, Capture, Share, the podcast for food bloggers, food lovers, and everyone in between. My name is Kimberly. I'm your host. Episode 57. Welcome back, everybody, to the Eat, Capture, Share podcast. My name is Kimberly Espinel. I'm a food photographer and also food photography teacher, the podcaster here at Eat, Capture, Share, which is also the name of my Instagram food photography challenge. And you guys, you're in for a total treat today as I speak with two incredible food photographers, incredible food photography teachers, incredible YouTubers, Joni Simon and Lauren Karras. But before I tell you about the episode and what we're going to be talking about, I've got three really fun, exciting, amazing, fantastic announcements that I need to tell you about first. So the very first one is that my Eat, Capture, Share Instagram food photography challenge is now open for registration. And it's a really, really special one. I'm not going to give too much away. It's a little bit of a surprise. If you know me, then you know I love a good surprise. Really fun challenges, really incredible judges, lots of little twists and turns like I've never done before, and I'd love for you to join. So head to the show notes and be sure to sign up. Now, unlike all other years that I've gone before, there will only be two challenges this year. So normally I have three, one in the winter, one in the spring, one in the autumn, but this year the spring is falling by the wayside. So it means there's even more reason to join and to join now. The second announcement is that my signature e-course is also open for registration. Like the challenge, it will only run twice this year. It ran four times last year because of the pandemic and all sorts and the demand and what have you. That's not going to happen this year, just twice. And one of those two times is right now. So if you're looking to uplevel your food photography, if you want to learn how to create an income source online, if you want to build your food photography business, if you want to find your signature look, really define it, and just take that next step in your food photography, this course is for you. So again, I'll pop the link to all the details that you need in the show notes. And then finally, if you're listening to this episode in real time, tomorrow my book baby comes out into the world, Creative Food Photography, How to Capture Exceptional Images of Food, will be stepping out and making her debut tomorrow. So what that means is that you've got just until midnight tonight, January 6th, to pre-order. And when you do, you also are entitled to the pre-order bonus, which is a 100-page ebook. It's like I've put so much heart and soul into it, almost as much as the book. And it's definitely worth having. Again, I'm not going to give too much away. But if you're listening to this after the fact, so after the challenge has already opened, please still go to the show notes because you'll be redirected to pre-register for the next one. Same goes for the e-course. If you're listening to it and it's already closed, then just head to the show notes and again, you'll be redirected. And as for the book, of course, you can order it anytime, but the pre-order bonus will actually then be an ebook that you can purchase in my shop. So I will put the link to all of those things in the show notes for those of you who missed the boat on the pre-order. Right, enough announcements. Let me tell you a little bit more about today's episode. This is the third time that Joni, Lauren, and I have come together, and we always do it at the start of the year. And normally what we do is we look ahead at trends, at things that we see coming, and we definitely do that in this episode. And we spend a lot of time talking about Instagram, especially TikTok video, and also dig really, really deep on food photography gear, cameras, lighting, you know, the whole nine yards. So it's definitely worth listening to. But unlike previous episodes that we've done together, which I will link to in the show notes, in this episode, we also take a look back because 2020 was a quote unquote unprecedented year, and it warranted a look back. So we spent a little bit of time looking back and looking at how everything impacted us as food photographers, the food photography industry, and then we look ahead and march on and look at what 2021 holds. Now, just one tiny little note before I let you go and I let you listen in to this really, really fun and exciting episode. My mic was having a moment, okay? Like, I don't know what was going on, but it was having a moment. And my brand new podcast editor, Mara, did her utmost to try and get rid of some of it. It's like a crackly noise. She edited out what she could, but there's still some of it there. But I think the content is so fun and so good that it's worth dealing with it. It's okay. And it's just me. So Lauren sounds amazing. Joni sounds amazing. So it's just me. And I think, you know, once the first couple of minutes, there's quite a lot and then it settles and then it comes back. But I think once you are in the swing of the episode, it'll be fine. So trust me. Worth listening to. All right, I'm going to let you go and hand you over to Joni and Lauren. I'm assuming that everybody who's going to be tuning into this episode knows you, but just in case, can we start with introductions?
Of course. Yeah, I can go first.
Go for it.
I'm Joni Simon, and I think folks who do know me probably know me from my YouTube channel, The Bite Shot, where I teach food photography.
Cool. Yeah, I'm Lauren. I run what is now Food Photography Academy. It has been that stage up until late this year. So yeah, I'm also teaching food photography and all that fun stuff over on YouTube and my website.
Amazing. I love that. Food Photography Academy sounds really like flashy. Like, I love it.
Great. Oh, thanks.
You know, normally what we do when we hang out on the podcast is we make predictions of what's going to happen in 2021. But it felt like this was a year like no other. And it was definitely worth also taking a little look back at the year that's been. And I'd love to start. So, you know, we all put our heads together, so to say, and came up with a little list of things from this year. And the very first thing is that 2020 felt like it was the year of the sourdough. Any thoughts?
Absolutely. I did join that bandwagon. I did start a sourdough. I started two, actually. I think the first one I called Douglas. He didn't make it. But my second one, Ryland, is still going strong. Oh, so wow, nice. Yeah, I'm very happy with my little sourdough baby.
Amazing. Joni, did you bake as well? Did you bake bread as well?
Unfortunately, I did not. You know, I felt like maybe it's the rebel in me was like, everybody's doing it, so of course I'm not going to do it. Yeah. But too, it was just such a busy year, I think, in so many regards that I didn't get around to doing it. I'm also a little scared of sourdough. I feel like it's such a complicated animal. Am I mistaken in that?
I can't say because I've never made a sourdough. Never. I also didn't jump on the bandwagon. I did pickle stuff. We did ferment stuff, but I didn't down the sourdough route. But I have to say, I did notice that everybody who did, their audience grew like tenfold.
Really?
You know, like everybody who did a whole sourdough tutorial, one minute they had 10,000 followers, and the next minute they had like 80,000 followers. I was like, dang, I should have done that.
Amazing.
Oh, dear. And then the second thing also, of course, because we had COVID that we thought really made 2020 what it was, is this whole idea of doing more with less. Especially the beginning of the pandemic, so many things were sold out and unavailable. And I'd love your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I found at the beginning of the pandemic, as it kind of just felt weird to be a food photographer. Something didn't feel right with me about going out and buying loads of food for a shoot. normally I do as much as I can to use everything that I buy and shoot and eat as much as possible. But of course, there's always certain things that it's just not possible. And that just, something felt strange about that at the beginning of the year as well, particularly for personal projects that weren't for a client as well. It was like, is this really the time for me to be doing that and buying all this stuff? And it really forced me to try, like you said, to do more with less and think about shoots with things I already had, or just kind of resurfacing old props and things like that. It was interesting, but I think in a good way, it's made us all think a bit more about what we use and how we use it and how responsible we can be in our choices.
I remember it vividly because I had, it was like probably the third week of March, right after everything really started to shut down. And I think it was different for different parts of the world and different parts of our respective countries. We were still able to go to grocery stores here, but then I just remember walking in and looking at the produce department and it had just been obliterated. And I had a shoot that week for a client. I was doing three videos and I needed red bell pepper and there was no red bell pepper to be found. So I think it was an opportunity just talking with the client saying, hey, can we maybe think about redoing this or doing this in a way that's understanding that we've got shortages, or do we wait on this? Because it was also, it forced a lot of us to grapple with was unpredictability of how long is this going to last? And should we postpone a month? Should we postpone a year? So what is the impact? What are those right decisions? And so I think it, you know, really forced a lot of communication skills and a lot of creative thinking, like Lauren said.
Yeah. And also for me, I generally work with a team. I seldom work by myself. And so back in February, lots of the shoots that I had, I just had to cancel because I didn't know, was it safe? Did we have to wear masks, not wear masks? How were we going to social distance? And also I was in a real state of shock. What was this thing? And you know, what was it going to mean? And were we all going to die, kind of thing? So I really felt I needed a couple of weeks to just wrap my head around the whole thing. And then actually one of my clients also, they went under. They didn't make it through the pandemic. So it was, it was very, very interesting.
Yeah.
That kind of leads quite nicely into something else that he noticed was really a marker for 2020, which was this whole thing of food and food politics and politics in general making its way into a lot of food accounts. And I love your thoughts about that.
I mean, it's been a huge year for politics in so many different ways, and so many things that have been brought to light that are so important and have taken too long to really have their place. I think from kind of from the pandemic side, I feel for governments at the moment, not necessarily that governments that are in power right now are necessarily ones I voted for, but either way, I feel like no one can win in this situation because everything is unpredictable. No one has the answer and the right answer. And it is tricky to know what's the right thing to do. Do you lock down? Do you not? And the impacts of lockdowns on society and looking at how those pandemic-y lockdown things affect different people groups. And it's kind of shining a light on inequality in massively developed countries that you think, how is this still a thing? And it's sad, but I think it's good that those issues are becoming mainstream and they're getting their time in the spotlight, in the center where they should be.
I agree. I think it was clearly a trying year on just so many levels. And I think that for me, it was an opportunity to listen a lot more. And, you know, I think all three of us for sure have a very global sense in terms of the people that we interact with, in terms of the people that we teach. And so I think that I had a major realization this year in just thinking, I don't know what everyone's going through. And I live in this very specific bubble in this very specific place. But, you know, how I conduct my business and how I respond to and connect with the greater community and to serve, I think that it just required a lot of listening and being kind of slow to speak, if you will, because I think that sometimes, especially those of us with more public platforms and, you know, bloggers as well, you know, everybody across the spectrum, you know, we can be really quick to put things out there. But I think that taking some time, and I think that that was an overall theme too for 2020, was just to really take some time to reflect on what's important and what do we really value and what's happening to the people around us and how can we be most helpful to support the greater community. And I think that it all starts with listening.
Yeah, that's so beautifully put. I also thought it was really interesting that a lot of the times, I mean, politics is, you know, is always there, right? But generally as food bloggers, content created within the food space, most of us don't really go down the politics route because it feels kind of like we're stepping out of our lane. It doesn't feel appropriate. But for the first time this year, I felt there was a marked difference of people who were like, okay, I'm going to listen, or I'm going to say something. And then people were like, here's my brownie, you know, look at this. And I think I was a little bit judgmental and that I felt, oh my God, this is happening. How can you not talk about this? Like, how can you not express support or whatever it is, right? And then as things calmed down, I was like, actually, some people aren't comfortable talking or going down that route. And if that doesn't feel right to them, that should also be okay.
Totally.
It took me a little while to wrap my head around that we're all dealing with it in a different way. You know, there's no right way to deal with it. And deciding to not make a statement about it was just as fine as people said, you know, I stand with Black Lives Matter or whatever it was. That's how I felt.
Yeah, there's a beautiful quote that I came across, and I'll have to pull it up and share it with y'all after this. But it was something along the lines of, we have to recognize that everybody's sort of on their own spot in their journey, you know? Mm. And so to expect anyone to be a fully formed, perfected human is, you know, and so sometimes I think that two folks just, you know, don't even know, you know, they haven't gone down the road of processing some of these things because it wasn't in their sphere of awareness, you know? Yeah. And I think that it's an opportunity to, again, just help people to start those conversations and to evaluate, where am I on this and what do I have to contribute to this? And so, place any sort of expectation on other people who may it be at some other point in their journey, you know, is always unfair.
Mm-hmm. But enough reminiscing. Shall we look at what we think is going to happen in 2021?
I don't know. I'm like, I feel like 2020 was the year of just shattering any kind of prediction or expectation. So I'm like, good for you.
I know. Like, how can we even dare to predict after what was like the most unprecedented year ever? Yes. And none of the things you said, I think, came true because, you know, gosh, what a year. But let's be brave and let's just say that we think that we've got a sort of lens that we can look through and predict and look into the future. But one of the things that I think one or two of us highlighted was this idea that we're going to be doing a whole lot more photography shoots for takeaway menus and delivery stuff. And I don't know, does anybody want to add something to that or delve a little deeper?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I feel like something that should be tasked on all of our individual plates is creating content around shooting things and packaging. Because I think that that's something that a lot of folks weren't familiar with and don't, you know, there's certain skills that relate to, you know, when you've got shiny packaging, but like, how do you show that? How do you make that appealing? You know, certain challenges of to-go items that aren't necessarily as styled and gorgeous. So how do we make that? You know, I think that there's some real opportunity for maybe education from this group to help with that.
Yeah, I agree. Lauren?
Yeah, I think it's opened up a whole new market of clients as well, because particularly small local restaurants, businesses, some of them don't even really have much of an online presence. They are the local pizza place, particularly where I live in Switzerland. Every town is a very small town. So there's not huge amounts of social media and imagery and photos and ads all the time, but they've kind of entered this time now where the only way that they can do business is by delivery or takeaway. So being able to partner with these small businesses now, they have a need for that kind of photography, is really cool in a way to feel maybe there's something I can do to support this business as well.
Yeah.
I mean, not in any way saying, oh, the whole reason that they will be able to continue as a business is because of me and my photos. But just, it's a new way that people are working together as a result of this. And I think that is something positive that's coming out of this as well. There's more collaboration. Totally. It's a good thing, I think.
Sure. I think the businesses that have pivoted and the businesses that have developed their online presence, if they didn't have one, that have developed their takeaway menu, that have really taken this challenge and run with it, those are the ones that are surviving, that are making it through. And although I wish COVID had never happened, in a way, I think actually it's setting restaurant and food businesses up for what is inevitable for what is going to happen in the long run anyway. You know, we all want things, convenience, and just clicking here and clicking there. And so I think this is a real opportunity for them. And then for us, I love it when there is creative boundaries that you have to work towards. And I think it really means that you have to be more creative in, and as you mentioned, Joni, with shiny plastic packaging or, you know, just different angles, or how can you still make it look attractive? And that is such an amazing, fun challenge, I think, as a photographer. So in a way, it's a win-win out of a terrible situation.
Yeah, I saw something so cool the other day that a local restaurant here in town, the chef, he's had a certain amount of notoriety, and they're not necessarily a restaurant that you would think of for to-go food. It's kind of more of an elevated dining experience, but he's recently started, he's teaching cooking lessons, but taking it a step further by having pre-packaged mise en place all packaged together, and then those can be delivered or picked up. And so then folks are participating with what he's already done the prep work for and then enjoying that meal. And I thought that's a really cool, unique way to build some business, also build some PR. I just thought that that was really cool. And you wouldn't necessarily have gone down that road without this situation.
Yeah. And I think it's a bigger lesson as well, just generally, that I think the more creative you are, and you have to be as an entrepreneur, the more creative you are, the better you can deal with any changes and challenges. And so this has been really, in a way, a weird gift for them and also for us to think about how can we still make an income, even during a pandemic, even during an economic downturn. So it's been interesting from that angle, I think.
Yeah.
Are you guys ready for the next prediction?
Oh, yes.
Great. Definitely.
The next one is TikTok and Reels are taking over and video is here to stay.
Oh, yeah.
100%.
Tell me more.
Oh, I did my very typical thing when Reels came out. I was like, oh, why another thing? But now I'm like, it's all I watch on Instagram. I feel like there's a certain creativity with Reels that weren't so much there with stories, or even maybe TikTok when it first came out. I follow a few accounts on Instagram who just do really creative things with Reels. And it kind of inspires me to think, what could I do next year with food content to be that creative? And I just think it's such a fun little challenge to have that really short snippet of time to create a story, convey a story, capture someone's attention, make something really cool. And actually, I'm totally converted. I love Reels.
Can you mention,
I haven't made one yet, but
can you mention the creatives whose work you really enjoyed?
Yeah. So there's this couple called Becky and Chris who are, I actually originally found them on YouTube. They do a mixture of photography and interior design stuff. Mm-hmm. And then there's a fashion creator called In The Fro, who to be honest, I'm sure a lot of people listening will have heard of her. She's a really big YouTuber, but her Reels are insanely cool. They are so creative. They're definitely worth watching. And I love watching her Reels.
Yeah. I feel slightly overwhelmed because I'm like, oh, there's just so much opportunity for content. And so then
you
know, a single human, how do you apportion the energy? So I think that that's going to be the challenge to figure out if we're making way for this new content, then what other content do we let go or not invest that creativity in, or how do, you know, so I think that I'm like, oh, I'm so excited to do these things, but where's the time?
Yeah. And I know that last year when we spoke, we talked about TikTok even then. And I'm wondering, did either one of you start a TikTok account?
I did. And I have a handful of videos on there, but I feel like what Lauren had said, it's that creativity and the storytelling that can really grab people. Like I've just more or less repurposed stuff I'm already doing or a little behind the scenes.
Gotcha.
Yeah. I actually only signed up for TikTok about a month ago and I'm still definitely just a consumer on there. I have not posted anything. And at the moment I'm still in the phase of following the Swiss memes account, which is just hilarious. And so I'm kind of having that experience with TikTok right now. Hopefully next year I'll be able to contribute something.
But I think that's it. Like you start just watching and seeing what other people are doing, figuring out what you like. I don't know. I mean, you guys know I'm not a video person, So the thought of doing either, but I'm also wondering if kind of there'll be people who will just take to TikTok and Reels and run with it. And that will be their thing, but they won't have a podcast. Or there'll be people who do the TikTok, the Reels and do it really well, but they won't do their IGTV and their YouTube. And that, I mean, maybe you can do everything, but maybe this is about thinking about where your strengths lie. What are you good at? And I know that kind of snappy thing is just not me. No, like I love the deep conversation and the longer this, and I'm a little bit worried. But I definitely think it's worth playing with these and just having a look and a feel and a thing. But I definitely think they're here to stay. Like I think they're
totally
here to stay.
Yeah, but that's a great point though, from an Instagram perspective, as Instagram continues to roll out these different features like the IGTV and the stories and the reels, and you're like, what does this look like just as an Instagram platform?
Try to stay
relevant and at the forefront of the social media technology. You're like, what sticks around and what stays? I think you're right that it's very much like what feels right for you, and that they are such different mediums.
But Joan, I'm going to back on that, because it's really interesting. If I think about the business mentors that I've had, and if I think about people who have quote unquote success, what is it? And usually, not always, but usually it's something about niching down and being good at one thing and nailing that and dominating there. And in a way, I feel that Instagram is doing the exact opposite. It's diluting what it actually was and becoming, I feel, almost too many things. Mm. It's trying to be YouTube. It's trying to be Pinterest. It's trying to be a photo sharing app. It's trying to be Snapchat. It's trying to be TikTok. It's almost, and maybe they can get away with it, but I wonder if it's just diluting what it actually, and they want to be Amazon as well. Because of course, now we also have the shop feature.
Oh yeah.
You know what I mean? It's a little bit of all the things, but is it too much? Sorry to be interrupting your podcast experience, but did you know that my book, Creative Food Photography, is now available for pre-order? Full of inspiring content, ideas for finding your style, up-leveling your food styling, and taking your composition to the next level. The book is released on January 7th, 2021. But if you pre-order today before its release date, you receive a free workbook that accompanies the book. You can find out more at thelittleplantation.co.uk/food-photography-book, or find the link to all you need in the show notes. Thank you so much for your support. And now back to the podcast.
Yeah, because you can't things to all people.
Yeah. And I do feel like it is a completely different app than it was when we did this chat last year. They'd started to roll out a couple of things, but I mean, like you said, the addition of the shop and all these things, it's like using Instagram now as a content creator changes all the time, and keeping up with it is a challenge.
Yeah.
And I think you're right. You totally have to figure out which bit of it is for you. Where are your people hanging out, and are they on stories or IGTV, or are they feed people, and kind of play to your strengths to reach those people? And yeah, I think there probably are very few people who could do every single aspect of Instagram and do it well.
Yeah. I also think there's something about Instagram, like we're delving deep into Instagram now, so you can see my nerd brain is going into overdrive. But I think Instagram is looking at what happened to Facebook, which we're going to talk about in a moment. You know, like Facebook, when it first hit the scene, was vibrant, was happening. And now really, it's a platform for the mature person. The younger crowd has totally abandoned Facebook. Better said, I'm wondering if Instagram was concerned that Instagram was going to go in that same direction. And so to ensure that they can still get that younger cohort, that's why I think they've brought in the TikTok, the Amazon, the what have you, the Reels, the Amazon feature and what have you, is to pull that in and to keep it appealing for that younger crowd. And I was thinking about this because, of course, they've switched around the engagement, you know, the heart thing. It's gone kind of in the corner. And then what's more prominent where your finger goes to is the shop feature. I was like, why have they done that? What is the thinking? And I'm wondering if the whole community engagement stuff just now isn't their main thing anymore. And it's more about making it easier for young up and coming entrepreneurs, creatives to just ditch the blog and just have all their bits and pieces on Instagram and sell on Instagram kind of thing. that is maybe part of their thinking. Like, let's make, what will the young coming of age person want? And let's change it more towards that. Like, that's kind of what I think they're doing.
Yeah, I definitely get that commerce vibe off of Instagram so much more than being like a genuine place just to connect and get inspired. You know, it's definitely feels very monetized. It feels very, I totally had that same exact feeling, Kimberly, when I saw that the shop feature was like right where my thumb was. I was like, oh, this is not a good indication.
Yeah. But also what I've noticed is if I have a post that get a lot of comments and engagement, usually that used to really mean lots of views and lots of people, you know, seeing it, blah, 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 blah. But it's not necessarily like that anymore. Mm-hmm. So even posts where I have 200 comments doesn't necessarily have loads of likes, and, you know, which has been interesting. And I'm also wondering if what they've tried to do is to stop people from, quote unquote, gaming the system. Because got a lot of comments, got lots of interaction, they would show you. And then there were these comment pods and by comments, by likes, by this. And maybe that is their way to counter that. Mm. And I don't know. I'm trying to get into Instagram's brains.
Right? It's complicated.
Yeah. And I feel like the volume of ads on Instagram now as well. Like, I was chatting to someone the other day about how I feel like the whole Instagram ad has become a niche in itself for those, you know, those kinds of products. That's like, oh, it's an Instagram product. Those ads, you don't see them anywhere else for the kind of gimmicky, slightly fun things that people like, oh, I bought it on Instagram. That in itself is a niche now. Yeah, it totally is what you're saying about it is becoming so much more commerce focused. And
although I haven't seen those.
Than it used to be.
You know, the
way really? You don't get that advert for the floppity fish cat toy. That I definitely, definitely did not buy.
No, that must be like a Swiss thing.
Lauren's discovered the darker spots on Instagram.
Right?
Oh my goodness.
Listen, you guys are missing out. This is the good stuff.
Sounds like it. Listen, shall we move on to prediction number 3? And that is, after a year of being caved in and quarantined in, we're really all craving real life things, real life connections, in-person workshop, book, the works.
100%. One of my saddest moments of 2020 was canceling my workshop with Kimberly.
I know.
Oh. And even when we had to cancel, it was like, oh, maybe we'll be able to do it in the autumn or the winter. And at the time, that seemed so far away. And now I'm like, what were we thinking?
Yeah.
It's funny because we've all built our businesses in the online space, but there's nothing like that real human connection. And not being able to have that this year, I totally agree. It's what everyone is waiting for and reaching out for. Mm-hmm. And I can't wait to like meet people again and show them how to use a camera in person and make food together and eat together. And
And it's like the food conferences, you know, the blogger conferences and events
that
you realize that, yes, the education in those is helpful. And yes, you learn things. But to me, the value has always been the in-person connections that you can't plan for, that, you know, people you just bump into or run into or learn something at a conversation at dinner, you know, that those are the meaningful things that come out of those events. And I think that that was very clarifying probably for folks. I don't run those things. And Lord knows that would be a very overwhelming experience. But I just, my heart had to go out to those folks who run those kind of events, because I think that that's such an important part of their DNA and what they do.
Mm-hmm. But also because we had the pandemic and because this was an election year, I don't know about you, but I was glued. And especially when we first went into lockdown, I was glued to my phone. Like, I think normally I'm on my phone, try to keep it to about 2 hours a day. Really try. But I can openly confess that first February, March, I was 6.5 or 8 hours on my phone, like constantly checking the news, refreshing the news, checking my feed, seeing what so-and-so was saying. Da-da. And then of course the whole George Floyd thing happened. I was like, what's everybody saying? Da-da. So I was like on there for hours. And I think now I'm just like, the moment I can put my phone away, it feels so good. You know, having a book, just being present, not being in front of a screen, I so desperately crave that so much more than I did, say, last time we spoke. And it's because we've had this virtual overdose, really, for the last 12 months, that all the things like the books, the in-person, the tangible, feel so much more precious.
It really does. I think everyone's got a bit of Zoom fatigue now. My husband, Ben, he's got a standard corporate job and his whole world has been Zoom since March. And even him and his colleagues are saying in the beginning where everyone would turn on their video just so they could see people. Now it's like, oh no, I don't like another Zoom calling. You just want to go for a real coffee.
And you know, it's so funny because my book was going to launch it in 2020. And I remember thinking, oh, it's such a nice sound. 2020, my book's going to come out in 2020. And of course, the pandemic and everything, we had to push it back. But I don't know, Joni, how you feel. I feel really like, because Joni's bringing out a book, Lauren. I don't know if you know.
I do know.
Yeah. So I feel like our books are coming out in the right year. 2021, the year of the tangible, the real, the year of the in-person, the real, the year of the book. That's how I feel. I could not have chosen a better year for the book to come out. And I don't know if you feel the same about yours.
Oh, I absolutely do. Because certainly, people are craving that. But, you know, then also just the potential to possibly connect with people in person and, you know, what that might look like, because there's that potential in 2021 that clearly didn't happen in 2020. And maybe too, we're just kind of more mentally prepared for the unpredictable that, you know, to plan anything too solidly, if you'd really been banking on, you know, that 2020 release, and this is what it's all going to look like, and that just didn't happen. At least there's some hope for 2021.
Yeah, I think we've got this, Joni. Like, yeah. 2020 was going to be my year. No, 2021 is going to be our year. Just know it.
I know. I just can't wait to see, though. It was so much fun to watch your process, Kimberly, because I know you did such a wonderful, beautiful job of really sharing a lot about, you know, what was going into the images. And I felt like the community was so involved in the building of it. So I'm so excited to see the beautiful work that you've put together.
Thank you. I feel very nervous, actually. Yes, because it's my heart. It's my second baby. What if nobody likes it? I just really want the book to make people happy after what's been like global collective trauma. I just want this book to make people smile and just like really hope it does.
Well, I will say it's already made me smile just from the watching of the putting it together and, you know, your experiences with the printers and, you know, just the love and attention that went into it. I'm like, oh my goodness, this is, you know, it feels so immediate. You know what I mean? Because everyone was so involved in that process. So I think it's going to be a smash hit.
And you in turn, you kept everything under wraps. It's like, oh, by the way, I wrote a book. Here.
I kept it under wraps partially because I think that the majority of my writing and photography for the book happened during quarantine, and I just was so mentally raw in a certain way that I wasn't sure, like, just even how to go there, you know? Because I think that we all have had moments this year that you're like, I'm just trying to keep it together, you know? Yes. So I think that there's probably a lot of that in my process, and I feel like my process was very messy in a lot of ways, and maybe it would have been better to share. And two, I there's a lot of books coming out, and I thought, I'll keep things low key and we'll wait because it's still so much further out too until mine comes out. So I thought
it comes out on my birthday.
That's
Yeah, that's a good sign. It's a good sign, girl. It's a good sign.
You know, provide plenty of leeway for everybody else who's also writing books too, because I'm equally as excited just to see, you know, because I remember Andrew Scrivani, his book and released it in 2019 and how he, in a lot of the interviews he did for that book, would talk about the fact that he'd always wanted to write a book about food photography, but that no publisher was really there to do that kind of book, that the interest wasn't there. And I'm like, how incredible is this? That we are now at this place that there is so much interest and that there's demand. Like, it's not just interest, but there's demand for this kind of book, and that publishers are excited about it, and that our people in the audience are excited about it. And we're these numbers that I'm sure you saw it too, Kimberly, where you're just like blown away by the reception to this.
I mean, I haven't looked. I actually was just speaking to one of my coaching clients. She's like, how many books have you sold? And it's like, the distributor sends me a note every month, but okay. I've decided not to look and just keep my eye on the ball. But what I do feel is that in a way there's a place for all of these photography books. And I wasn't sure about that in the beginning. I was like, my God, you know, when Andrew's book came out, I was in the middle of writing. Oh. I was like, oh my God, is like, that's the gap filled. And then Bia's book came out. I was like, okay, that's the gap filled. And now I'm like, actually, I think there's space for all of them. Mm-hmm. And each says something a little bit different that's going to speak to somebody else. And so, you know, it's been really actually lovely that Andrew Scrivani paved the way.
It's such an exciting time to be doing that kind of thing, like you guys with all your books. You're all amazing because it is such a new thing. You know, if you think about other niches, you never think there's already so many cookbooks. Mm-hmm. We don't need another one. Or, oh, there's so many books on crime novels. We don't need any more of those. But this is such an exciting time because you really are starting this. Mm-hmm. And it's cool. Like, people will look back on this whole chapter of food photography and when it started and the original, like the OG books, and you guys will all be there. It's so cool.
It feels really good. So something a little bit darker, we've touched on it, but prediction is that Facebook's downward spiral will continue into 2021.
I agree. Mm-hmm.
I do. I really do. Mm-hmm.
It is on its way out.
I know for me, you know, with folks that are in some of my paid courses that come with a group component, a Facebook group, that more and more I see more people who, you know, opt into the course and say, but I don't have a Facebook account. And so that's definitely a problem.
Yeah. And also what I have noticed, I think we all have groups. I've just noticed that my reach within my groups is just plummeted. So, you know, people just aren't seeing the content. And it's just really tricky. And the other thing is the layout of Facebook has changed too. I don't know about you, but I have to press something and then press something and then press something to actually enter my groups. Mm-hmm. So, you know, like it feels like it's a little bit of a, I have to jump through a couple. It's not just right there for me to see and grab and engage with. And so sometimes I also miss comments as a result of, you know, them having pushed the groups slightly, you know, into the background. Whereas, you know, just 2 years ago, it was all about groups. That was like the revival of Facebook. And so I'm not quite sure what's going on there, but I'm not enjoying the platform particularly.
No, for me, very similarly to Joni, I always had a group that was available for people who bought my paid courses, but more and more people were saying, I don't have Facebook or I don't want to use Facebook. So with Food Photography Academy, I did away with Facebook altogether. And now there's a private community forum, which once you're logged in, you just get access to it. So there's no Facebook at all.
So what do you use, if I may ask?
Yeah, so it's an add-on for WordPress called Envision Community. Mm. It's really good, actually. It is very like old school forum style, but it's so convenient because everything is in there. And there's no ads, there's nowhere else, there's no distraction. You know that everyone in there is a member, they are a food photographer. It feels like a real community that you're much more in control of, not like in a kind of policing the community kind of way, but just in a, you own that space. Yeah. So you can really grow it to whatever you want it to be rather than having this limit of like a newsfeed where things get lost so easily. I don't miss any posts and I can give feedback on images and answer all the questions, and people talk to each other a lot more as well, which is really nice to see.
Because what I know in the Facebook group is that not a lot of the time, but sometimes people sort of gate crash it. You know, like we have some, you know, some entry questions because it's a free group, mine. So there's some questions that you have to answer to get in, but still sometimes people sneak in and they're like, go check out my new blog post or buy my new presets. It's like, what? Whereas I could see that not happening because the etiquette and the vibe of what you describe, Lauren, is totally different.
Yeah, it just feels more intentional sort of from all sides as well, which is nice.
Okay, so last but not least, that we're going to get into some serious food photography gear that all the big food photography or photography companies are really stepping up. A lot of them coming out with their mirrorless versions and this, that, and the other. And both of you are really, really good with your gear. I'd love your take and your thoughts on this.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like it's, there can be a lot of pressure. And I think that there's got to be a little bit of temperance with all of the new gear that's coming out so rapidly. And it's like, it's almost obsolete 6 months later. And so I always kind of tell people like, yes, there's the latest and greatest, but at the same time, you know, don't feel compelled just because at the end of the day, and I had this conversation with a friend who's a commercial photographer for 20 years. And he said, you know, at the end of the day, the camera is a camera. Don't put so much pressure on that it has to be this latest and greatest. So I just, you know, I always say, don't feel like you have to give into it. But I do think there's some really cool technology that's going to make certain aspects of our jobs also easier that we're seeing come out, especially in the lighting department.
Okay, let's go all nerdy here. So let's start with cameras. What are you both using at the moment? Sky's the limit. What camera body would you want now?
Ooh, good question. Well, I'm still on my Sony a7 III, which I've had for, I think, nearly 3 years now. Recently, Sony have brought out a couple of new cameras, which look amazing, but definitely on the pricey side. If I was going to get a new camera now, I would actually get a completely separate video camera and photo camera. I wouldn't buy a mirrorless or a DSLR and use it for video because it's not like they are, their video capabilities are brilliant, but they aren't video cameras, if that makes sense.
Totally.
So I would probably invest in, well, if money was no object, can I say Red Weapon? No, probably. To be honest, probably one of the Blackmagic cameras. They've got a lot.
Go Blackmagic for sure.
Yeah. And actually, it's kind of fun because at our church, we've set up the whole live stream this year and we've been using the Blackmagic 8M Mini Pro switcher, which is just incredible. And it's totally sold me on the whole Blackmagic video system. So that would probably be where I'd go next.
Well, nice. And you know, it's all your fault, Lauren, because I've
got I know. Now. And you have one. See, I don't even have my own one yet.
And I have since started learning how to edit in DaVinci Resolve, which is their editing software.
Nice.
So potentially making a move from Adobe Premiere into Blackmagic. It's very similar. So anybody who's edited in Premiere or Final Cut Pro, it would be a pretty easy jump over to DaVinci Resolve. It's a pretty nifty software. And I'm like,
it is.
Blackmagic.
Can I just say, the two of you, you're so geeky. So geeky. I've never even heard of Blackmagic. No idea what it is.
It's the video space is one to watch.
This is it. This is it.
And I think it's coming into its own now as well.
Amazing. Well, I have to say, this is really weird. I've been super, super, super faithful to Canon. And even a year ago, the thought of not having a Canon, like that was just inconceivable. But I am finding that it's very bulky, very heavy. And with all the mirrorless and all, and I don't do videos, it's really just photography. I am kind of craving maybe like another camera in addition to what I have, but like a smaller, lighter one, potentially for really, really simple video recording stuff or reels or whatever, right? Like there's something light and fresh and a little bit, you know, like a little bit more up to date. Like I feel
maybe try renting one of the Canon mirrorless.
Yeah. I think I'm gonna
try it out.
And yeah. I heard that the Fuji is that a Fuji mirrorless is supposed to be really good. Like something just a little bit more kind of pocket sized. So and also the other thing I have to say, I'm not big on iPhone photography. It's not my thing. I love my camera. But the new iPhone does look really, really, really cool.
Yeah.
So good. And
this year it's been about 2 months because I've been a Canon shooter for a good while now.
And what model do you have, if I may ask?
So I started on the 70D mm-hmm. and then I was on the 5D Mark IV, yeah. Super happy with it. But I had a friend who, we were kind of talking about color and certain things. And he said, mm-hmm. there's slight differences, yes. Once you really hone your eye, just in terms of different manufacturers, he said, you might try Nikon and just see what you think. And so I bought a used Nikon D750 and was like, I love these colors. And I actually mm-hmm. ended up shooting my entire book with the Nikon D750, which was from a technical perspective, a lesser camera compared to my Canon 5D, but it just, the way that the images look just felt much more home to me. And I think mm-hmm. that's like such a personal decision and such a personal perspective. And I also think kind of comes with, as you gals know, the more exposure you have to your images, just the more you kind of understand what's going on with them. And so I actually just a couple months ago invested in the Nikon Z7. So it's a mirrorless and I've been
nice.
So happy with it. I just finished shooting a cookbook for a client recently and did the whole cookbook with the Z7 and it was, it's delicious and I wouldn't trade it for the world.
Amazing. I think mirrorless is the way to go. It really is.
I think this whole gear conversation that comes up so often, it highlights really important points for people who are maybe new to photography or thinking about buying a new camera. That something I feel really passionately about is people really understanding what they need from a mm-hmm. camera versus what the marketing department of the latest model are telling you you need. Like Joni said, the dynamic range and the exposure you get is so much more important than how many megapixels it has. Yeah. I feel like people say, oh, wow, this has 50 megapixels. I'm like, yeah, but who needs 50 megapixels? Literally, if you actually knew what 50 megapixels is designed for, you're going to have to deal with
in your storage when you get.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But it's like if people kind of understood that with a 12 megapixel camera, you can print 300 DPI on a standard cookbook size. It's like, wow, okay, I don't need 50.
Do you know, one of my most favorite cookbooks is Heidi Swanson's Near and Far. And
beautiful.
Oh, I love it. But I could be wrong, but I think quite a few of those images she shot on her film camera, like a really old one. Do you know what I mean? And there's so much depth and so much character, and mm-hmm. who cares that whatever pixels she had, you know what I mean? Like, it really doesn't matter. But Joni, can I ask you one more question? And I do want to take just 5 more minutes or so on lighting and what's happening there. But so you've got the, I'm very jealous. And mirrorless, and Lauren's got a mirrorless and I don't. But do you also have another camera that you use for your videos? Like, do you have a third camera or do you use your shooting camera for your videos as well?
So I am still using for video. I mean, I've experimented and played with the Nikon, but I really bought that more as a stills camera. And I think that, it's great for that from that kind of perspective, but I'm still shooting all my video on the Canon 5D Mark IV. Mm-hmm. And then, especially too for clients, because then my second camera, my B-roll camera, the, Canon mirrorless RP, that one, I like to keep, like if I'm shooting a video with two different cameras, I like to keep them the same brand so that the footage, has that similar character and look.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. What's happening on the artificial light front? Is there anything that we need to be looking out for in 2021? Anything fun, exciting happening? And there definitely, I cannot contribute or add. I do not know anything. So I'm going to leave that to the two of you.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like there's a lot that we're going to see happening in the LED department in terms of mm-hmm. continuous light, again, because the demands of video content. So needing mm-hmm. those continuous light sources. And that, I mean, I feel like the brands out there, Aputure and Godox, like we just continue, especially Aputure, like they continue to release new and better and bigger. And so, I'd say just keep your eyes on the LED space. And I think we'll see a lot more modifiers that work with LED lights so that you can continue to manipulate that in ways that we've been more traditionally accustomed to in the world of manipulating strobes.
Gotcha. And do you think that's really for people who are very, very serious or for somebody who's a hobby food blogger? Most of the people who listen to this podcast fall within that space. It's their side hustle. Do you still think that these lighting setups are worth taking seriously and looking at?
Yeah. I mean, I'd love Lauren's thoughts on this too, but I feel like the technology continues to get more and more affordable too. Mm-hmm. You know, you look at something like a Godox 60W, I forget exactly all the, but it's super affordable from the perspective of what it is. And you don't have to have the knowledge in terms of manipulating strobes. Like it's sort of very similar in the way that it behaves as natural light. It's just a matter of knowing how to manipulate that. And, you know, between Lauren and I, there's plenty of YouTube videos that can help fill in the gaps on that education. And amazing. So, yeah, I think that those kind of options are great for just a couple $100s. And it just, I know that for folks in the food blogger space, you know, who might have kids or families or other commitments during the day, or it's just anxiety provoking to have to kind of gauge your shoots based on the sun, that it just opens up a lot of potential. And two, for quick and easy reels and videos, you know, if that's your format, that it opens up possibility to be shooting those all times of day or night.
Yeah, I definitely think maybe not next year, but the year after I'll get an artificial light. But I really like, well, you know what? I want to get a flash and continuous all in one, you know, get it. But I really love flash. That's really nice.
I think flash has a steeper learning curve, but it's more flexible. Mm-hmm. And once you've got over that kind of like, oh, I've figured out how it works, it's more portable as well. It's generally the setup is lighter. And when I started with artificial light, I kind of was doing continuous because it's easier. Mm-hmm. And then I got into flash and now I pretty much only use flash and I save the continuous for video. But like Joni was saying earlier, with the modifiers, that's where you can really do a lot of really cool things and get the creativity going. So having a good flash and a good continuous light as your base is great. And then kind of explore the modifiers to, yeah, try out some different looks and some different techniques.
Girls, I'm excited for 2021. Very grateful that you shared your thoughts with me and with the listeners today. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having us.
We can only go up from here.
Tell you. Is it just me or do you want to go and check out the whole black magic thing? Never even heard of it. That's what I love about these conversations. I learned so much and I hope you did too. If you'd like to connect with Joni or Lauren, please head to the show notes as links to all their channels are there. There's links to everything and anything we mentioned, including Joni's book, my book, the creatives we talked about. I mean, everything. Like the show notes are super comprehensive for this episode, so do go and check them out. Also, if you love this episode, please, please, pretty please share it on Instagram. Really, really makes my day. And I know Joni and Lauren would appreciate it so much too. And finally, don't forget my e-course, my book. Yeah, you know, I've written a book, did I tell you? And also the challenge. They're all waiting for you to be discovered in the show notes. So be sure to head there. And I hope I can celebrate the book and also the challenge with you on Instagram these next couple of weeks. And I can't wait. All right, I'll let you go and I'll be back super soon. Take care. Before I leave you, I wanted to say thank you so, so much for tuning in. I hope you enjoy the podcast. I also wanted to let you know that this podcast was brought to you by my Eat, Capture, Share newsletter community, and I'd love for you to join. I will pop the details on how you can join my creative community in the show notes, so do go and check it out. Also, if you enjoy the podcast, it means so much if you can rate, review, and subscribe. All those things will help the podcast to grow and to reach the right audience. And yeah, you'd kind of make my day. All right, see you soon. Take care. Bye.